Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, some date in November. Look, you started early. I'm not.
We are 12:03.
Today's the 26th.
And you are?
It's the 26th. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 2 minutes after the hour,
my computer's battery was dead, so it didn't wake up fast enough.
Yeah, see, it was
in hibernation mode.
Are you recording?
Wow. Not yet. Still opening my recorder program.
So here we are, and it is Soundbites. We're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. We'll be bringing you our views and ones and twos and even threes, because there are, in fact, three of us. And we'll start with today's news story. The Wall Street Journal this week ran an excellent series on government surveillance tools in the digital age. One story looked at FinFisher, a remote spying Trojan that was marketed to the governments of Egypt, Germany, and other nations to permit surreptitious PC and mobile surveillance by law enforcement officials. The piece noted that FinFisher's creators advertised the ability to deploy the Trojan disguised as an update for Apple's iTunes media player, and that Apple last month fixed the vulnerability that the Trojan leveraged. The Wall Street series and other media coverage of this story have overlooked one small but crucial detail. A prominent security researcher warned Apple about this dangerous vulnerability in mid-2008. Yet the company waited more than 1,200 days, over 3 years, to fix the flaw. The disclosure raises the question about whether and when Apple knew about the Trojan offering and its timing in choosing to sew up the security hole in this ubiquitous software title. According to Apple, as of June 2011, there were approximately 250 million installations of iTunes worldwide. Yes, it was an update. It was disguised as an update to Apple's iTunes media player. Why is this a big deal? Imagine that you're in an airport lounge waiting to board your flight. You pop open your laptop to see if you can hop onto an open wireless network. Bear in mind that there are plenty of tools available that let miscreants create fake wireless access points for the purposes of routing your connection through their computer. You connect to their fake network thinking you can check your favorite sports team's scores. A few seconds later, some application on your system says there's a software update available. You approve the update, you're hosed. Or maybe you don't approve the update, but that may not matter because in some cases, auto-update features embedded in certain software titles will go ahead and download the update at that point and keep nagging you until you agree to install it at a later date, even when you're home and on your personal secure network where you think you're safe. The iTunes program checks that the binary is signed by Apple, but we can inject content into the description as it opens a browser with a malicious binary so that the user thinks it's from Apple, Amato said of his attack tool. Emails shared with Krebs on Security show that Amato contacted Apple's security team on July 11th, 2008, 2008, 2008, to warn them that the iTunes update functionality was being abused to push out malicious software. According to Amato, Apple acknowledged receipt of the report shortly thereafter, but it did not make contact with him about his findings until October 28th, 2011, when it sent an email to confirm his name and title for the purpose of crediting him with the reported flaw in its iTunes 10.5.1 release patch details. Interestingly, Apple chose to continue to ignore the vulnerability even after Amato shipped a significant feature upgrade to Evil Grade in October of 2010. And that leads us to our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. The poll is, Apple took over 3 years to close a Trojan hole. The choices are, that's unconscionable, so what, they're Apple and can do no wrong, and since I never use any Apple product, I don't care. So far, we've got 37 votes. The vast majority of our listeners, of course, don't use any Apple products and don't care. But that's any Apple product, including iTunes. So if you use iTunes on a Windows box, it's still vulnerable. The problem is in iTunes, not in the Macintosh itself. Any product that runs iTunes is vulnerable. Followed by that's unconscionable, followed by so what, they're Apple and they can do no wrong. Now, I know you're going to have more to say about this, so when your done taking the poll, check the yellow box underneath the poll. It will take you to another truly great website where you can enter your opinion, the question being, how do you feel about Apple leaving a Trojan hole open for over 3 years? And when you're done with that, of course, come on back and give us a listen. And, of course, that's our question to you. How do you feel about Apple leaving a Trojan hole open for over 3 years? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
I did have one email come in.
Well,
though,
let's talk about this for a second.
Okay.
First.
All right.
3 years it took Apple to close this hole. 3 years. And it's a pretty big hole. I mean, it actually let people in and into your machine so they could record what you do and steal anything you have.
But evidently it wasn't that big of a hole that if, you know, more had complained, like Windows.
Nobody can complain if they don't know about it. It's not whether you know about it. It's whether or not they'll close it up. And
well,
to take 3 years to close up a hole in your operating system.
So it was actually found 3 years ago.
Yes. Yes, the guy who created it.
For you folks on camera, we're all staring.
We're all looking at Steve.
We're looking at
but
Steve.
It's just, to me, that's completely unconscionable, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, no.
I'm sure that they had something they thought was a good reason, but to leave a vulnerability in their software, I'm not pointing a finger at Apple. Microsoft's done it too, and anybody who's done that, who's left a hole for three solid years, deserves to be at the very least upbraided by their community. I think it's a terrible thing to do. I think it's completely unconscionable, and I can't imagine that there is a legitimate excuse to doing it that way.
No, you're right.
I'm sorry. I just
It's totally true. I mean, we jump on Microsoft all the time when they take so darn long to get out their updates.
Right. Right.
You know?
I'm not picking specifically on Apple. Had this happened to Microsoft or Linux or anybody, I would say, or any company that makes a piece of software, I would say the same thing. And we have in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It's unconscionable, and I'm not impressed.
Okay.
I expect, and I've said this a million times, particularly of Apple, I expect better.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I expect them to be better than that. And in this particular case, they're not.
Right.
And it bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
No. You know,
rightfully so.
Right or wrong, we all hold Apple to a higher standard.
Yes, because of the way their demands and everything else. Yeah.
They completely, utterly, totally failed.
No, you're right. When you're right, you're what?
And that it doesn't happen so often, so I have to gloat about it. All right.
I almost wonder what their reasoning was and why it took that long. Was it such an integrated piece of the code that they couldn't make a quick fix? Because that's usually why you think it takes a long time for bugs to be fixed, is it's so integrated into the code that it's hard to kill that one without introducing more.
Okay,
but
at that case,
why?
Should they
have
not told people, don't upgrade
some warning
until we have a fix out or something that would tell people
to cover
there's a problem, so...
Just to make their users aware that they're aware of the issue and they're addressing
it. Right, because it hits both Apple and PC people because it's in iTunes, which so many people use.
Oh, yeah.
It really bothers me, and it's mostly, like I said, we hold Apple to a higher standard, and they failed in this particular case. All right, you had an off-air question.
Yeah, we had an off-air question, and...
And I need a name and a city.
Let's just call it...
give me a fake name and a fake city. Because I don't want you getting in trouble either.
Yeah, okay. We'll just say Thomas.
Thomas.
From Toledo, Ohio. How's that?
No, it should be local.
Rochester.
All right. We'll do Rondaquoit.
Oh, Rondaquoit.
Right. Since I'm bringing it.
Yeah.
And the discussion was around wireless mice. And this one individual was told, no, you can't use wireless mice. They will get you infected. And I sort of jumped in there and said, trying to be mediator, and said, no, you can't. All the mice.
That's not mediation, by the way. Mediation is what do you think? can we come to some agreement? That's what you did was, in fact, take the opposite side, which is not quite the same
as
mediation.
I took the truth. And the truth is a wireless mouse is perfectly safe because all it's doing is transmitting the signal that you would get right from a regular mouse to go from its transmitter to the mouse. It cannot infect your machine. It cannot transmit other stuff, anything else. It just knows screen position.
Well,
it doesn't tell you what's on the screen.
This is one of those it depends answers.
Yeah.
Certainly you can intercept the signal. That's not hacking.
No.
If it's a wireless mouse, all you get are the XY coordinates. Actually, you don't even get coordinates.
No, you don't.
You get the deltas.
The deltas,
yeah.
You get the deltas and the speed. And that's all you get. And
which
that's useless information.
Yeah, totally useless.
You can't backtrack down that path into the mouse or into the computer to do anything, because there's nothing at the other end. The only information that the computer will accept is the delta and the speed. And if you try to give it something else, it'll think, it'll jump the mouse around because it thinks that's what it
although
is.
The mouse driver could be hiding a Trojan horse. So
that's what I was just going to go into.
It's a separate thing.
If it had a keylogger. Now here you go. Keylogger, let me explain that. And please, you gentlemen, jump in too.
Right.
Keylogger will sit there, and it's a Trojan that you get on your machine, and it records all your typing. So now that with those coordinates of the mouse,
right?
They might be able to tell, because first they got to know what website you're on, and this keylogger would gather all that information in,
right.
And then with that, those it would then also capture the positioning of the mouse. But it has
but that's different from hacking the wireless signal.
Yes,
nothing to do with hacking the wireless signal.
Exactly.
Now,
wireless mice are safe.
Thomas may have this confused with wireless keyboards, which in fact are an entirely different story. A wireless keyboard can in fact be hacked.
Yeah.
Well, hacked.
Mm-hmm.
You can intercept the signal because it's all Bluetooth. And if you have any version of Bluetooth less than 2.1, it's probably not encrypted at all or it's encrypted badly.
Yeah. And even the RF wireless mice can be intercepted.
Even the
as well.
RF wireless mice can be intercepted, but it's harder.
Yeah,
but it's not the mouse that's causing the problem.
Keyboard, yeah.
Keyboard, yes.
But
and if you intercept that signal, you would certainly get all the keystrokes.
Mm-hmm.
But again, a wireless mouse is perfectly safe.
Yep.
I suppose somebody could randomly move the mouse around the screen and click things, but. The chance that they would happen to do anything bad is incredibly rare.
You got better odds of being hit by lightning or winning the lottery.
If somebody does that, go get
then,
a
lie. Then we're back into the malicious mischief instead of fraud and identity theft.
But those people
theft.
Have none of your data, so they've certainly not hacked into your machine.
I love a wireless mouse. We use them all the time down the shop.
Yep.
You know, and again, if wireless mice were that unsafe, why would your local banks... You know, you go into their offices, and they're using wireless mice.
Right. Now, I don't recommend a wireless keyboard, but a wireless mouse is absolutely no big deal.
Well, the keyboard, you're not moving around. That usually stays stationary, where the mouse is constantly being shifted around if you're working on something on the side. Yeah. So I can move my wireless mouse out of the way, and, you know, don't have to worry about that stupid cord knocking things over.
Right.
Alone.
Well, yes. Now,
and I hate when the cord gets under the front edge of the mouse and then the button stops working because you can't push down anymore.
But the problem with wireless mice is not that they can be hacked, but that they use the same signal as everything else, so it is possible that you can't control them as well.
One other thing, since we addressed that, but we did have another person jump in on the Microsoft, the Windows... Apple.
iTunes.
I'm so used to saying Windows.
If you want to say the word problem, you want to put Windows in front of it. Yeah.
Joe and Cheektowaga had, we hold Apple to a higher standard because of their walled garden approach to their platform.
He's right. They have walled off everybody else, and they insist on controlling everything. The good news is that means they have fewer problems. The bad news is when they do have a problem, they have a limited team of people to fix it. So... And the walled garden really doesn't work past the stuff that Apple sells. I mean, if you put Adobe products in your machine, you're outside the walled garden anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So only if you never loaded anything that wasn't from Apple do you really truly have a walled garden.
Well, that's like I was just telling another friend. She's just getting on to iTunes.
Yeah.
And I told her, was leery about putting her credit card out there. And I've told a few other folks the same thing. Go to the store and get those $25 or $15 or $10 gift cards.
Yep.
That way you're not putting your credit card on there. What you're doing is buying that card and you scrape it off for you folks that don't know. It's a lot safer if you're leery on this too, especially with the holidays and that. You can buy one of those cards, scratch it off, and once you log into your iTunes account, you can put that code in. And it credits your account, say it's a $15 one.
Right.
You type that code in, and all of a sudden now, we're up in the upper right-hand corner, it said $0 available, it'll now say $15. And you can start buying your iTunes movie, iTunes and everything else. And
you still need a credit card to get into iTunes.
No, you can create an iTunes account with a gift card.
Yep.
Oh, very nice.
Yep.
Finally.
Really?
Yeah, you used to have to have a credit card.
Yep.
Oh, I like
that.
But
now you can use a gift card
to create
the account.
I like that.
Yep. The one issue that still crops up, one of our customers had this problem this week, when you buy something on the iTunes store, be it on your computer, on your iPad, iPod, whatever, it asks you for your iTunes password. And then, to not be obtrusive, it won't ask for your password again for 15 minutes.
Right.
Unfortunately, this gives your children a 15-minute window.
To buy anything they want in-game.
One of our customers, his son asked if he could buy a $1.99 thing, and Dad said okay and typed in his password. And then the kid took the machine away, and within the space of 15 minutes, ran up $1,500 in charges.
Nice.
And say what?
Nice.
Before you have to type the password in again, he's so we're trying to $1,500.
The absolute last time that child ever touched an iPad.
Is he still walking?
Well,
are both legs broken?
So the customer calls us to get Apple's phone number so he can complain to Apple. And this is
how is it Apple's fault?
We see these stories in the news all the time.
How do they get blamed?
Yeah, there was a lady in England whose kid bought Smurf berries, $1,000 worth of Smurf berries for the Smurf game, and she tried to get Apple to reimburse her, or tried to get the credit card company to reimburse her. I suppose technically, a credit card company might consider it fraud because the kid used it without your permission, but.
That's
maybe only once.
Yeah, right. I that child would lose all iPad privileges for the rest of his or her natural life.
Yep.
What are we listening to?
Wrong button. That's the right button. But yeah, so that's especially good for your kids. Don't put your credit card number on your iTunes account or on your kid's iTunes account. Get gift cards. Or as the parent, you can add an allowance to your kid's account, and then they can't spend beyond that allowance.
Yeah, Apple's done a good job with that. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 18 minutes after the hour. If you're on the line, stay on the line. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Whew. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have folks on the line. We'll start with Chris from Gates, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Yeah, I guess I'm staying on the same theme you guys were with the iTunes. I have a first-generation iTouch, and the other day I wasn't even connected to Wi-Fi, and all of a sudden it said updating iTunes. And the only thing I had left, all my music was gone, all the audiobooks, and only thing was there was like the last 8 podcasts I had kind of downloaded the day before. Just wondered why maybe that had happened. I know it happened once before years ago, but just kind of caught me off guard.
Did you have the iPod connected to your computer at the time?
No, it wasn't.
Okay, iTunes does not run on your iPod. It only runs on the computer.
I know, but it said updating. It said updating iTunes, and all of a sudden, all my library's gone. All my podcasts, except for the last 4 that I had last 8 that I downloaded the day before.
Again, was this on your iPod or it had to be on your
your computer?
Computer, right?
This is, I'm in my car with my iTouch in my hand. I'm not anywhere near any Wi-Fi or anything. Well, on the screen pops up.
That should have
updating iTunes.
That should have been a clue because iTunes does not run on your computer. On your iPod.
iPod, yeah.
It only runs on your computer.
So you actually got a message on the iPod that said updating iTunes.
Yes.
So that was a fake message you should have ignored and
well,
not allowed
even
to run.
Connected to Wi-Fi or anything, and then what ended, I didn't, I just, you know, went to see what happened, and, you know, my music is gone, and my audiobooks, and...
You might have had it set to search out networks.
Yeah, you may have
been... And when you're passing through an area, it might have caught a strong enough signal on an open public network that's how you got zapped.
Ah, okay, because I was trying to figure out. I wasn't even anywhere that I knew that I had Wi-Fi.
Right,
you can.
It's everywhere.
Right, there's two. Go ahead, Steve.
I say, you can set your devices to automatically connect to open networks.
Mm-hmm.
So if you happen to be driving down the street and maybe stopped at a stoplight or a stop sign somewhere, even just parked, if you're parked next to a building that has an open Wi-Fi network, your device will connect to it. You can turn that off in the settings so it only connects to devices or to networks that you want it to. So it must have been connected to a Wi-Fi network, and you must
have had... infected.
Yeah.
That was infected, Because iTunes does not run on your iPod, and you cannot get a message saying iTunes updating on your iPod.
I know, but it's happened before years ago, and I just figured, oh, well, you know, something was wrong. But thanks, guys. I have one other question, though. Because it is a first generation, and I know I can only update it so far, I'm getting a lot of apps and stuff that they need the OS 5 or whatever,
right,
whatever
right.
the newer is. Is there any way to get them off other than connecting to your computer and your computer saying, okay, this isn't going to work? Or?
Well, the first thing is just don't download them in the first place.
Well, they just pop up there that say, you know, you have an app that needs to be uploaded. And so you go to upload it, but it says it can't. So it kind of stays there. It never goes away.
Oh, well, it's an update for the app, and the app is looking for a newer version.
So, yeah, you have to read the update notice and see what version the new, what OS version the new app needs. But you can delete any installed app on any device. If you tap and hold on the device or on an app, they start wiggling. And
oh, okay.
That lets you rearrange them on the screen. And there's also an X icon that will let you delete them.
That part, but I was concerned in the app where it just gives you the app update. So it seems like I can't get rid of the update without getting rid of the app.
Right. If you delete the app, the update goes away. But beyond that, no, there's not much choice. Apple assumes that as a good Apple-ite, you are updating all the way through.
New term? Apple-ite?
Apple-ite. Yeah. Yeah.
You're on a roll today.
I am on a roll today. That as a good Apple-ite, you are, well, I didn't want to say Apple zombie, or I didn't want to insult the poor one. But as a good Apple-ite, that you are updating and that you have the latest generation, because that's all, you know, Apple has always had, and I can't necessarily fault them for this. Apple has always had a history of abandoning old versions of their operating system when it is time, and they believe that the new version's abilities outweigh maintaining the old one. And they've really kind of done that with iOS 5. There are a lot of features in iOS 5 that everybody's coding for now, and that older, particularly a first-generation system, really just doesn't have the ability, the oomph, to handle well.
Yeah. In that update list, you can uncheck an item you don't want updated, but I don't see a way to have it stop telling you about updates.
Yeah, I usually don't even connect it to my computer, you know, just very rarely, but I just wondered if there was another way to do it. I do have an iPad, too, so, you know, I didn't update the iTouch because I got the iPad, but that doesn't help me. And, of course, you want to listen to podcasts and things like that with the iTouch that you would do.
Right.
Yeah.
Just wondered if there was anything that I could do, but thanks, guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've got the same.
Go ahead.
I've got the same issue. I've got a first-gen iPod Touch. It can only run OS 3, updates that require OS 4 or OS 5, I just uncheck in the update list so they don't install.
Right, or you can take away the apps since you got the iPad.
Yeah, I want to keep the version that I have. I just I don't want to go to the new version.
Right.
But
the only other choice is you could uninstall all the apps and just keep it for the podcasts.
Yeah.
In her case, that's what she really wants it for anyway.
Yep.
But still, you don't have the convenience of your calendar and all that other stuff. I understand that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is George from Webster, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Well, I'm running Windows 7.
Yeah.
And every time I turn on my desktop, I get this message. I was in Word, and I can't get out of it. And this message comes up. The document schtsks.exe caused a serious error. The last time it was open, would you like to continue opening it? Yes or no?
And what happens if you say no?
If I say no, and I'm doing it right now, it says Word failed to start correctly last time. Starting Word in safe mode will help you correct or isolate a startup problem in order to successfully start the program. Some functionality may be disabled in this mode. Do you want to start Word in the safe mode?
All right. Could you spell the name of the file that's not starting up? SC, what is it?
Yeah, let's see. Hang on a second. I got to get back to that.
Okay, generally, George, you should write these things down that we don't have to wait for systems to start up.
Oh, now it has a different one. It says defmanager.exe caused an error.
I think you got something in that machine that's crawling around.
Defmanager is a malware program, so you are infected with malicious software.
Yeah, I was going to say, even the first one that he was mentioning that I was listening to, just didn't sound like normal for Word.
And it may have been that whatever anti-malware software you might be running is partially removing it, but not completely removing it.
Because the only thing Word would do is if it couldn't open up the initial application, you would get DLL errors, EXE.
Right. Well, winword.exe is the primary EXE file
for
Word.
But once you open that up, and if there's any other issues with any of the other...
Right, and it does say the document schdsks.exe. So it sounds like you are definitely infected, George. You need to dance the security tango at the very least.
Okay, I will do that.
All right.
Now, I bought the disk a couple years back. Can I still use that?
What you can do is just use those programs, but then...
First thing you should do is update
them. Yeah, go get them updated. And each of the programs, even if you have them installed right now on your computer, each one of them, if you go up usually to the help and click on the help, there's an update function. Because, yes, AVG is now up to 2012. Super Anti-Spyware and Malwarebytes both have newer versions, and you definitely want to grab those because they update the database, and the programs are more efficient. They're better at finding stuff, and that's why we still recommend those three programs to do what they do.
Okey-doke?
Okay, I will... Give it a shot.
Let
Excellent.
Us know.
Thanks, George.
Yeah. And if it doesn't work, what should I do? Just take it to somebody and have them try and eliminate it?
Yeah, depending on whether... The other thing that we're running into, and matter of fact, I just had a system in with rootkit. And rootkit errors are literally ones that are loaded right when you start up the machine. And the only way to physically get them out is we have to take the machine back to our shop. We pull that hard drive out, put it on our bench where we can isolate it, remove the root kit, and then start the rest of the cleanup because it gets rid of the initial part, but then we can kill the rust.
Okay, now I have one quick question.
Mm-hmm.
I have Norton on my machine.
Mm-hmm. That's for viruses.
Stop it?
No, viruses. See, folks are getting confused between viruses, Trojans, and malware. Okay. Viruses were very benefit. They were an annoyance. Let's put it that way. They took down networks and, the hackers, I took down CNN, I took down 1,200 computers, look at me. They never derived any benefit out of it. Now, what they've done now is they've created things like rootkit or, say, Keylogger or anywhere else where they can just simply, here's a simple one. There's a program out there that'll get on your machine and in the background, and it's a malware program, it will steal your email address. You think, so? What's a? Well, what they do is these hackers now steal your email address. So if they grab, say, 250 email addresses from you, 25 from this person, this and this, they wrote a small little program that just goes out there, steals emails. Well, now they turn around, collect those email addresses, sell them to other spammers. So before, when they were creating this code that didn't do squat, now they can turn around and make money by selling email addresses to other spammers.
Right. But to answer your question about Norton, George, it hasn't stopped it so far, so it's probably not the program you want to use.
Yeah.
You also have to be aware that Norton is a paid product. If you haven't continued paying for it, it's actually not working.
No, I've paid for it.
Okay. But it clearly is not stopping this particular infection. So put your Security Tango disk in, update everything.
Mm-hmm.
And run it, and if it doesn't clear up the problem, then it's a rootkit, and you're going to have to take it to somebody, and they'll have to fix it professionally.
Okay, I've just been playing here while talking to you, and every time I close it out, it comes back, it comes up with a different file name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
You probably have a lot of infections then.
Yep.
And I can force the closing.
Yeah.
And,
and then it just generates another file name.
But then the next time I turn it on, it's there again.
So you do have to clean it up, George.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
I shall give it a try.
There you go.
Have a good one.
Yeah, things are just getting tougher. The Security Tango is still valuable, but if you get caught by a rootkit.
Yeah, the all games, this one client. What, you're taking it? You can't do it here?
Yeah, right.
I go, no, I'm sorry. And it turns out it's one of the other employees.
Yeah.
That refused to let me have his computer to clean it out. I'm finally getting his machine at Christmas time. But we've more or less isolated him.
See, here's the part I don't understand. An employee who refused to give you their machine, if that machine is owned by the company, the employee can't refuse.
He's one of the owners.
Well, that's different. And he's not an employee, he's an owner. That's a different story.
He's one of the partners, let's put it that way.
Yeah, there you go. That's a different story.
So, it's like, and finally, he's getting all these other folks complaining because he's sending out, especially to a couple of the employees there, he's forwarding them this and that, and their machines are getting infected.
Right.
And it's like, sorry, blame him, blame him.
That's right. That's right. All right, the future of augmented reality technology is here as long as you're a rabbit. Bioengineers have placed the first contact lenses containing electronic displays into the eyes of rabbits as a first step on the way to proving they are safe for humans. The bunnies suffered no ill effects. It's just a contact lens. They didn't in any way damage the bunnies.
I read that, and it's like, ooh.
They just put in contact lenses and then took them out again.
What happens if you have a short?
Well, they didn't have a short, so... The first version may only have one pixel, but higher resolution displays like those seen in the Terminator could one day be used as sat-nav enhancers showing you directional arrows, for example, or flash up text and emails, perhaps even video. In the short term, the breakthrough also means people suffering from conditions like diabetes and glaucoma, as Wilford Brimley would say, diabetes, and glaucoma may find they have a novel way to monitor their conditions. In February, New Scientist revealed the litany of research projects underway in the field of contact lens enhancement. While one company has fielded a contact lens technology using a surface-mounted strain gauge to access glaucoma risk, isn't that cool? None have built in a display or the lenses needed to focus projection onto the retina and then tested it in vivo until now. We have demonstrated the operation of a contact lens display powered by a remote radio frequency transmitter in free space and on a live rabbit, said a U.S. and Finnish team led by Babak Pravitz of the University of Washington in Seattle. This verifies that antennas, radio chips, control circuitry, and micrometer scale light sources can be integrated into a contact lens and operated on live eyes. The test lens was powered remotely using a 5-millimeter long antenna printed on the lens to receive gigahertz range radio frequency energy from a transmitter placed 10 centimeters from the rabbit's eye. To focus the light on the rabbit's retina, the contact lens itself was fabricated as a Fresnel lens. Golly, am I familiar with Fresnel lenses. In which a series of concentric annular sections is used to generate the ultra-short focal length needed. They found their lens LED glowed brightly up to a meter away from the radio source in free space, but needed to be 2 centimeters away when the lens was placed in a rabbit's eye and the wireless reception was affected by bodily fluids. All the 40-minute-long tests on live rabbits were performed under general anesthetic and showed that the display worked well, and fluorescent tests showed no damage or abrasions to the rabbit's eyes after the lenses were removed. This is clearly way off in the future, but we're aware of the research that is going on in this field, and we're watching the technology's potential for biosensing and drug delivery applications in particular, said a spokes robot for the British Contact Lens Association in London. So, would you wear those lenses? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And while you're doing that, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you with all of your calls and questions. And until then, listen carefully to these little announcements because they're important to you and you know they are. Back with more of Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we hit what?
Oh, I was going to ask, you know, talking about that technology.
Yeah.
You know, if you had that in, you know, the contact lens.
Yeah.
And it comes up with a heads-up display.
Yeah.
It'd be great for guys. Because they wouldn't have to ask for, you know, worry about their wives or significant other saying, well, I told you, you should have turned this way.
Yeah, right.
You can sit there, have the heads-up display, never get in trouble because you know where you're going to go because the thing in your eye is coming up.
Right.
No more. See, if you had taken that turn, we wouldn't be lost. You're not lost. Right. You're somewhere.
Now, think of all the things your phone does.
I'm not
for
lost.
You.
I just changed to my destination.
All right. I'm being adventurous.
That little bit one.
There you go. I'm being spontaneous.
I want to take a different route.
You think of all the things your phone does.
Oh.
And now think of hooking that to your contact lenses as the displays. So you could do, you know, my phone, I don't go anywhere without phone in the dashboard. And now it could be sitting on my belt and in my eye, mm-hmm. right, at the same time. And the same thing with text messages, which is probably pretty dangerous when you're driving. But for other times, the bad part is going to be in classes when people are receiving text messages while I'm trying to teach. But they'll still have to send them.
I would give them an automatic F.
How would I know?
Well, if they look down or looking down at something.
And the same thing with tests, cheating on tests.
Staring vacantly into space.
Right. Same thing with cheating on tests. How would I know?
Yeah, true.
You know, that's why all my tests...
Scan them for any...
have to put an electronic jammer in every classroom around the school.
You can actually buy...
Jammers.
And I actually have more than once, while I'm sitting in a movie theater listening to people chit-chat on the phone or whatever.
I hate that.
I have more than once thought, it's worth it.
There are, I've read stories about movie theaters that have wanted to install those jammers, but then the first time someone has to dial 911 and can't, the theater gets sued.
Well, wait a minute. Rewind. What happened before cell phones? People used to go to the show all the time. They didn't have phones in their pocket. If there was an emergency, there's usually ushers in that. Or somebody can, you know, hey, this person's having an issue. Yell that out.
Yeah, find an usher in a theater now.
They're still using
once. They walk down and make sure that you're not videotaping the movie.
Yeah, right. That's about it. Back when I was doing, when I was the entertainment reporter at another station, I would review movies for them. And once I actually had to go back out to my car and leave my phone because I completely forgot you can't take your phone into a preview. And I try, you know, and I suppose I just could have said, seriously, I'm the reviewer.
Yeah, they don't want you uploading video clips.
But on the other hand, exactly, that's the whole point. Somebody in that theater, you know, somebody in one of those preview theaters is recording. I told you I had a copy of War of the Worlds with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
That was essentially shown through the...
Movies.
About 2 minutes into the movie, the zipper pull dangled in front of the screen. Yep. It was there for the whole time. It was just hysterical. They were selling it for $5, and I just had to buy it just to see. Because the movie had just hit the theaters. I mean, literally that same week. And so I thought to myself, this is clearly bootleg. And I've never actually seen a bootleg. It was $5, and I thought, well, what the heck. I'll go for it. We'll see what happens. All right, on to Victor from Irondequoit. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
I just downloaded... a Windows update, the Windows malicious software removal tool.
Yeah.
And after it downloaded, no problem, I went to look at the installed updates, and that's been installed like 4 times.
You get a new version every month.
Oh. Well, I installed it all this month 4 times.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, they update it regularly. The whole point behind a malicious removal tool is it removes malicious software.
It is usually.
And they keep updating the definitions and the engine to handle more and more malicious software because more and more comes out every day.
And to be honest with you,
it's usually
once a week is even scarce.
Well, Microsoft's malicious software removal tool usually is only updated once a month. It's the most bad of the malicious software.
Maybe
they had an out of cycle update because of newer ones. I'm looking on their website, and it's the CarBurp, the CritX, and the Dofoil. Are the three most recent definitions they added.
Because malware bites, I've seen it where it can do it 2 times in 1 day.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's not, yeah, like I say, once
more
a week
often is good.
Yeah, well, 1 week, I'd be even leery at that. Because right. Like I say, I can see malware bites will at least once a day have an update patch.
Okay. Well, now I learned something. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Goodbye.
Yeah, that's it's kind of like the... what was the one from Network Associates we used to recommend that scanned for the dozen or so worst malicious programs? So that sort of is what the Microsoft malicious software removal tool does. It scans for the worst of them that can affect Windows.
Yeah, what was the name of it?
We don't recommend it anymore because
yeah. Well, it didn't really didn't work because now those that it was actually working. We're already into it.
Yeah. But what happened...
What was the name of that?
What happened quite a few times is Microsoft will release a Windows update, and Windows stops working. And there have been several of these in recent months where people are blaming their blue screens on the Windows update, when it turns out the computer was infected with a rootkit or with some sort of software, and when the Windows update came along and fixed the problem,
right,
it caused worse problems because you were already infected. So this MSRT will scan for those worst of the malware before it tries to load updates.
Okay.
All right. Our next caller is George. Are you actually calling from Brighton, Michigan?
You've got it right.
How cool are you?
Look, I can't afford to miss you guys. If I fall behind, I'll never catch up.
Ain't that the truth? Well, what can we do for our Michiganian brother?
I would normally be calling George from Greece, but I'm out here for a little holiday.
Well, that's out for the holiday. Got it.
You got to do us one favor. Sure. We'll answer your question. While you're there, you got to inform the other folks that you're staying with in there about us and tune in to us.
Well, I certainly will do that. And they'd have every reason to follow you. You come through loud and clear on that internet.
Yeah, we do, don't we?
That's great. So a few weeks ago, you got me started on using the Windows Task Manager to better understand the way my RAM is being used and what the usage is of the CPU.
Right. Yep.
So now I learned there's more things that I don't know about.
A little knowledge is a dangerous thing, George.
We created a monster.
So here I, just to get started, I see something called Handles, Threads, and Processes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, to work backwards, there's a tab for processes, and I see some 54 things that are active. And although I don't know exactly what they are, I can kind of recognize them as things that the computer draws upon from time to time, and
right,
I presume in software.
Right.
So what are handles and threads?
All right, you start with a process,
mm-hmm,
right? And you know what that is. That's essentially a program that's running.
Okay.
Programs run in threads. The more threads a program uses, the more pieces and parts of itself it runs simultaneously. This is a very 101 answer, okay?
That's all I need. I mean, no, keep going, but 101's my level.
Right. And so let's say you have one process and it runs in one thread.
Okay.
Well, if you run it in two threads, and again, it doesn't exactly work this way, but it happens twice as fast. So it runs two processes, it runs two pieces of itself simultaneously.
I see.
It really isn't a two-for-one, but it isn't a one-for-one. It's not if you do two that runs twice as fast, but you see what I'm saying.
For example, I show here 54 processes and 600 and some threads.
Right. Yep. Most of Windows nowadays is multi-threaded.
And okay, one of the advantages of that is multi-core CPUs. In a lot of the modern CPUs, each core can handle multiple threads simultaneously. So you may have a quad-core processor,
yes,
but each core can handle multiple threads, so it acts like it's got 8 cores or 16 cores.
Right.
And so all the programs can run faster.
And would it be inappropriate to call it parallel processing? That's something different.
If you're a real computer geek, deep into it, yes, it would be inappropriate, but essentially, that's what it is. It's allowing you to do multiple pieces and parts of the program simultaneously.
Okay, Professor. And
handles.
15,800 and some handles.
Right. And handles are, they're just what they say. They're way you grab pieces and parts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So when a file opens, you're given a file handle. A process has a process handle. A thread has a thread handle. So all of those handles together, when you go to open a file, you don't pass the file to any other process. You pass the handle to that file so it knows where that file is.
Okay.
And how to get hold of it. It's a way to get hold of something. That's what handles do.
And can you take me one step further, closer to the use of RAM? Do these things affect the use of RAM?
They absolutely do.
Does it mean more of these can be active?
More RAM means more of these can run simultaneously.
Ah.
Okay. See, when you run out of RAM, you have something that you can take all of those pieces and parts and put them in a swap space on disk. If you have too much stuff to fit in RAM, some of it goes out to a special swap area.
Okay.
Then when you need a piece or part of that, it brings it in and puts something else back out there. That is to say, it swaps with something else. Now, RAM is very fast. Disk is very slow.
I understand that.
So the more RAM you have, the less you swap, the faster your machine can respond.
Okay.
It doesn't run faster, but it responds to different things faster.
Because it's in cache.
And there's the magic word that you just mentioned.
Cache.
So I wasn't going to bother you with this, but since I see...
I'm a little low on it this month.
And these things relate to the use of cache?
Well, cache essentially just means an area of memory where you store something.
Yeah,
right.
It's a swap area.
So there are file caches, there are thread caches, there are process caches.
And typically modern CPUs have very, very high speed memory inside the CPU, level one cache, level two cache, that runs even faster than your main memory cache. And so that helps the CPU run faster. So that, and that's one of the differences you see in price. You might get an i5 with 16K level one cache, and that will be significantly slower than an i5 with 64K of level one cache.
Right.
Okay.
And cache works, think of a database and how fast it can run off of the hard drive. Imagine how much faster it could run if all of the stuff was in memory, all of the data were in memory.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The same is true of files.
Mm-hmm.
The more you can load into memory, the faster they all run. So the bigger your cache, the more RAM you have. For example, when I look at my machine, it says my RAM is full, but really very little of it is taken up with programs, and the rest is cache.
Okay.
And what that means is that my operating system has decided, man, you've got all this extra RAM that you're not using. I'm going to load in the pieces and parts of the programs you're running, so when you ask for them, I can respond faster.
Okay, makes good sense.
There you go.
So whereas I was thinking about programs like Excel or Word or something like that as consuming RAM, it's really the sub-pieces.
It's all of them, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's everything.
All the parts of the puzzle.
That's why when Windows says, you know, you can run Windows 7 on 1 gig of RAM.
Yes.
Well, you can.
Just
but
that.
But if you've got 4 or 8, your system responds faster because it doesn't have to swap out to disk.
Okay, guys, I'm saturated for this week.
There
all
you
right.
go. Have fun in Michigan.
Thank you.
And what's interesting, a little Wikipedia search here, Brighton, Michigan is in Livingston County near Livonia.
Yeah, there's a Rochester, Minnesota, and what happened was people from this area went there and brought their town names with them.
Yeah. Well, apparently Edward Livingston was a very famous Secretary of State, and there's a lot of Livingston counties named after him.
Mm-hmm.
Answer the magic question, and the duck will come down.
Yeah,
the answer to that question was Stinger. Thank you, Orchard Park.
There you go.
The name of the program that we used to recommend was called Stinger.
You're absolutely right.
And it would go through, Orchard Park is totally right.
Oh, thank you, Orchard Park.
I was having brain fart. And
tell him what he won, Johnny.
Yeah,
say
really.
Say the magic word and the duck will come down.
Now, that was Groucho Marx.
Groucho Marx.
Yes.
Say the magic word and the duck will come down.
Yeah. Wow.
Stinger, thank you, Orchard Park. Excellent.
I think that's probably Bonnie.
Could be. They just said Orchard Park.
Yeah, it's no name.
Their Twitter handle? Or texting.
Texting.
Mm-hmm.
And it just said Orchard Park. Well, thank you, Orchard Park.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly the whole town of Orchard Park.
Our local Livingston County was named after Robert Livingston, a delegate to the 1775 Continental Congress.
Exactly.
More Livingstons, I presume.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Doggone it, I hate when we think alike. It bodes ill for me. All right, that's it. We're done. You've wasted an entire hour of your life listening to this show. Luckily, you're going to get the chance to do it again very shortly. We're going to take a little break while I beat Steve about the head and shoulders for taking my joke away from me. And then we'll be back on the other side of all this important information with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. You're listening to Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. When we come back, we're going to have you at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. With the longest-running computer show in the known universe, we are Soundbites, and we are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 2 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, guess what? AT&T and T-Mobile have announced that they will remove their pending applications to the FCC for their merger bid. This comes after statements from the FCC chairman strongly opposing the merger. In doing so, AT&T has agreed to pay T-Mobile $4 billion American dollars with a B to cover accounting and other costs that this may have caused. While AT&T would still like to merge, it is unlikely that they will gain antitrust clearance from the Department of Justice. It's the antitrust aspect of this that this is mostly about, in that AT&T has said that they want this move to free up the FCC to consider all options and focus both AT&T and T-Mobile on the pending antitrust. The $4 billion that will be paid out to T-Mobile will consist of $3 billion in cash and then $1 billion in spectrum infrastructure. This is more or less the public acknowledgement that the deal will likely fail and is more or less preparing for it to do so. Also on Wednesday, the FCC chairman called for the other FCC commissioners to hold a hearing in which AT&T would be forced to show how this merger is good for the public interest. However, now that they've dropped the FCC application, it'll probably delay any hearing in the FCC about the matter. A recent report within the FCC has claimed that an AT&T and T-Mobile merger would harm competition in 99 out of the top 100 markets.
Which one wouldn't it be?
Right, that's my thought. So for the FCC to push such a hearing is basically saying that the deal won't go through them. At a minimum, it likely won't go through with the Department of Justice either. So our question to you, should the FCC allow the merger? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. But hold off on making it.
I was going to say, one of my interesting conspiracy theories there is that this cancellation clause has been in the agreement since the beginning.
Right.
So it's just a way for T-Mobile to get some money. They never intended the merge. They knew the FCC would never let them merge, but AT&T can't give T-Mobile any money directly.
Right. Now, this way, that's a good thought.
So, yeah, $4 billion will be do good for their bottom line next quarter.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You ain't kidding. So we should be seeing the T-Mobile girl around for a while.
And her pink dress.
And her little pink polka-dotted dress. Although it's solid pink in the Christmas commercials.
Yeah. Well, also, got to have a tie probably to breast cancer.
Probably, although they don't say that anymore.
Yeah, no, well, it's so implied nowadays.
Yeah, right. Right, we see that everywhere. We see pink on the bracelets. There was a lady who was wearing a Save the Boobies bracelet where I got donuts this morning. So, yeah, there's just a lot of that that goes around. And you know, it's a great cause. Can't say anything against that, boy. I think that's a great cause.
No, I still have, matter of fact, a bandana hanging on my bike. It's pink. And it was for a ride that we did. My friend Colleen did it for breast cancer, you know, and I support that. You know, more research. And luckily, I've got a sister that is a breast cancer survivor due to early detection, and that's great.
Nothing wrong with that.
I'd like to have her this side of the dirt.
Yep. All right. Our next caller is Mark, who's probably from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
It's the infamous Mark from Henrietta. I'm in a situation where I got some VHS tapes, and I would like to digitize them. I wondered if you guys had any thoughts on a good way to go about that.
You need a digitizer.
Yeah, I kind of figured that part out. I'm thinking USB maybe be better than buying a new video.
Yeah, tape. There's you can find USB or composite to USB video adapters, usually around $100 or so. A lot can depend on what you're outputting from. If your standard VHS deck only has composite, then that's sort of the limit of your quality. If it also has S video, that's better. Component video is better. We use products from Elgato, the ITV capture cards. Although I'm pretty sure they're only Mac. I bet they'd have Windows. Yeah, they have Windows software on them now too. So you get a capture card for like $100, and for $150, it's also a TV tuner, which lets you watch live broadcast television on your computer.
I don't watch enough TV to talk about.
Yeah.
You're right.
But okay, no, I appreciate that. I just was wondering if we had any good things I needed to worry about.
As long as you get the right card and software, you can do it.
Good to go.
You can take all those old Jackie Chan movies and...
Actually, we got a whole bunch of 8mm movies that were converted to videotape professionally 8 or 10 years ago, and we'd like to put it all together into something that makes more sense now.
Looks like Belkin right. also makes one. Yep. So, several different companies make them.
You can, of course, have it done professionally, but it's going to cost you a lot more.
Yeah, that's the thing. We start looking at doing it professionally, you know, $25 a piece, and then we want about 8 of them done, and then we want a couple copies, and, you know.
Right. I know all about that.
Yeah, one of the annoying things is because it's an analog videotape, you have to do it in real time. So that, you know, 6 hours on one VHS tape will take 6 hours to digitize.
Yeah, I'm envisioning just sort of setting it up with a laptop, which I assume is going to be fast enough, and just letting it run.
There are also standalone VHS to DVD recorders. It's just a box that you put the VHS tape in one side, and you put a blank DVD in the other side, and it automatically digitizes it and burns it to DVD for you. if that's all you want to do, rather than have it in the computer so you could edit it, for example.
Well, no, it wouldn't be editing, but that conversion thing. I hadn't seen those, but that's good to look for.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there you go.
Well, but once it's a file on the
DVD.
Well,
as a DVD, yeah. It's an MPEG-2, and then you've already lost quality trying to get it that MPEG-2 into your computer, too.
Right.
Well, is there any issue over what kind of convert? What do you want to convert it to? You say MPEG-2 is bad. Is there something what would I want to go to?
MPEG-2 is the DVD standard.
Yeah, okay.
So it depends on what you want to do with it later. If you're going to, if you want to present it for editing, you might want to use a higher quality. But since you're coming from VHF, you're kind of limited to that VHS quality.
Yeah, but I also got to, can shoot video with a camera eventually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the other thing you can do. A lot of digital video cameras have an analog pass-through. So you can plug your VHS player into your camcorder, plug your camcorder into the computer, and digitize it that way.
That's a thought. Might be worth buying a camcorder just to do that.
Put that on your Christmas list.
The reality is you're already limited to the quality of the VHS tape.
Yeah, no, that part I understood, but it's never going to get better. That I can shoot video. Yep. Something I didn't understand until recently.
Holy cow, here's one.
My digital camera shoots video in like 10, 15 minutes or so worth on until you fill up the cart. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just found one on Amazon for $7. I don't know if I'd trust that.
Yeah, I know.
I thought it was too. I was kind of going, I've seen everything from $7 there to $560 for some high-end capture cards, and I'm going,
somewhere around the $100 range is where I start trusting
what you pay for.
Yeah.
You might even want to check the video card on your computer, because some of them do have video in capability built into the video card.
That's why the NS video jack is there.
It could be. Now, a lot of the video cards are video out,
okay.
So you can display your computer on a television. But if it has video in, then you might already have what you need.
Okay, I'll have to do a little checking.
There you go.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Mark.
Here's one from Diamond Multimedia. Are they still around?
Apparently they must be. Well, maybe not.
It's on Amazon.
Right.
It may not be.
We were talking over Thanksgiving about the thousands and thousands of vinyl records we all still have. And
yep.
I actually have a turntable that will let you plug it into the computer and digitize.
There's a few of those. I've seen those also with cassette tapes, so you can play a cassette into the computer.
Yep.
Was it Crowley makes one? It looks like a beautiful old piece of furniture, radio. And it's got a turntable inside, it's got a cassette player, it's got a CD player, and you can hook it to your computer to digitize, or it will just digitize internal to itself from the LP to the CD.
Nice. There's just an amazing number of ways to get all those. The real problem we have with any kind of technology is getting stuff from the obsolete format to the new format. That's always the hard part.
I had a colleague once that an uncle passed away or something, and they found this big box of 8mm tapes, and so they wanted to get that digitized onto DVD. And the cheating way to do that is you just have your 8mm player on the projection screen and take a picture of it with your video.
That's not going to be
not very good quality, but that's basically how they do it professionally. They just have a really tiny, small little box, and
right.
Apparently, Uncle there had a stag film in the pile.
Nice.
Oops.
And the video conversion company just left it in the middle of all of
exactly right. They're not there to judge; they're just there to make the thing happen.
I could see them calling. There's a stag film here. Should we put that in the collection or not?
All right, kiddies, you know what that sound means. Get your footy jammies on, grab a mug of hot cocoa in Indian style and a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap him awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Yep. Time
for Story Hour, Uncle Dave.
Good turkey dinner, though.
It was a good thing. All that tryptophan still coursing through your system.
I was a basket case Thursday night. I vaguely remember hitting the couch, and a friend called me to let me know, and I was watching this thing for the Kiwanis on our news, talked, and then passed out.
Yep.
That was it. Good God. But anywho, let me clarify. And I'm going to do this in a very mild tone. The recommendations that are on the website are that. Recommendations. And they are for a medium-sized user. Now let me define this.
Please.
It's for your average user that maybe wants to surf the internet, do letters, maybe play some iTunes, check different websites. Yes, write letters to friends and families. And yes, it can also handle Skype.
Skype and YouTube. Yeah.
And maybe some casual games.
Exactly.
Right.
But, and I say a very big but, the minute you start saying, oh, and I want to do World of Warcraft.
Yep.
That now adds another zero onto the end of that basic recommendation machine.
Right.
Suddenly there's a comma.
Yes.
A comma
and it's like,
that number.
Well, why don't you state that? We do. But see, you're not reading what I said. It's a middle of the road. Yep. Middle of the road means it's not low. It's not high. Once you go to these games and online games, hello, all bets are off. It is now a high-end machine. Not medium, not low. It's high.
The reality is
shooters,
the price of poker.
Multi-user, anything like that. You need a much higher-end video card. You need a much higher-end processor. I love those commercials for Modern Warfare 3, the vet and the noob.
Yeah.
Have you seen those? Apparently, there are more of them on their website than they've actually aired on TV. But I love the one where the vet, you know, the first half of the commercial, the vet is showing the noob how to do it. And then by the end, the noob is saying, oh, don't worry about it. I got this.
Yeah. The page says Dave's basic computer configuration. Go for the middle of the road Intel or AMD
Thank
processor.
You. Just thank you.
Mid towers have enough base for the average user.
I didn't make it clear enough.
Well, apparently you did not.
People think they are average.
What do I have to do?
You're not average. You're special. You are a unique little snowflake.
Folks have always told me I'm different. Yeah.
I think it was Wired that I read an article in where a guy went to all the different PC manufacturers and tried to buy a PC, and most of the companies sort of separated into home user and business and gaming.
Right.
Which is sort of the breakdown. But what if I'm a home user that wants to play some games?
Then you're a gamer.
I don't want to spend $3,000 on a gaming computer.
Then you're not a gamer. You can't play games.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the reality is gamers know they're going to spend $3,500 on a computer.
Right.
They know that going in. If you're going to play World of Warcraft for real, if you're going to play Modern Warfare 3 for real, you're spending money on your rig. If you're a casual gamer and you're playing Zynga,
you know, Angry
and all
Birds
of that other stuff, then you're a middle-of-the-road person.
Or Words with Friends.
Right, and if you're Chris Reich, you buy the cheapest computer you can and live with that. We love you, Chris. But the reality
that's the thing to remember. That $299 computer you see advertised in the big mall, you're not going to be able to do very much with that.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It's going to be... That $299 computer is the low end, and I keep relating it to cars. You know, add a couple of zeros on that and make it a car. $2,000 car is going to be a beater that gets you through the winter, but you're certainly not going to go cross country with it.
Mm-mm.
And that $1,500 computer that's a $15,000 car may get you across the country, but you're going to nurse it.
Yep.
And that $3,500 computer that's a $35,000 car, that's going to do whatever you want it to do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so pay attention to what it is you're buying.
I mean, I can't put the plow on it and haul lumber?
You can, but you aren't going to haul it far.
Yeah, exactly. Don't be upset when it breaks down.
I saw a minivan today on the way here had a washing machine strapped to the roof rack.
Absolutely.
The other
you
point,
can
and I'm
do
wondering,
it.
Why didn't you put it inside?
Yeah, right. Well, what was inside and how low was that van riding? There's your question right there.
The other thing that I want to kind of interject here, and Steve had brought up a good point, is, and I know he sees it a lot and I see it a lot, these folks that'll sit there and have whole meals over their keyboards.
Some of the disgusting things we found inside keyboards.
We all know that you're way too important to stop and eat separately from your computer. We all know that you're so important. But at least learn to turn your head and drop the crumbs off to the side.
Oh. Well,
or don't ask me to dig you into your computer because it's disgusting.
Well, one of the things that I carry both we have in the shop and the thing that we have in our, both Dan and I carry in our vans, is the Purell cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and this happened to me maybe, I want to say maybe about 5 years ago. I was at a client's, and this is before we got into the Purell. I literally picked up scabies.
Yep.
And for you folks that don't know what that is, it was on my arms. Because what had happened was I was typing on their keyboards. And, you know, you come home and, all right, you know, maybe rub your arm.
Right. So
on your hand. And I was for 2 days, because I didn't know what it was. And I'm digging myself raw, and it was bleeding. I went to the doctor. He goes, yeah, you got scabies. huh? What's this? He goes, no, just take this cream. By the next morning, it was cleared up. You know,
it's not, it's not life-threatening.
Yeah, but again, that's from stuff that's on these keyboards. That's why now I carry Perel with me all the time and coming out from people's keyboards. Even when we're in the shop, we'll take, like we were discussing before, a rag and wipe them all down. And sometimes we got to take them outside and take the air hose to it because the stuff that comes blowing out of there. I just had last week, I hadn't seen one in a long time. A bobby pin.
Wow.
A bobby pin actually come out of the bottom of a keyboard.
We have one of our faculty members, terrific person.
Cool. Lives there's on a video of a scabie crawling on
thank
his...
Thank you. No, thank you. What is wrong with you?
You just got to mention it to Stephen Hill.
I shut up. Get away from me with your computer. This is why Flash should be outlawed.
Actually, this isn't Flash, I don't think.
No, it isn't. She owns a farm. Right, and so she brings in her computer, and it's been on the farm, and there's, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Well, most of the time, it doesn't bother any of us. We had one technician who was allergic to something on her farm.
This is Og.
That was, Og, we love Og. But was allergic, it would be if it's Wikipedia, was allergic to something on her farm that had gotten on her keyboard, and this poor girl just puffed up like somebody had been beating her face.
Yeah.
You know, and just whenever that person brought her computer in, somebody else had to work on it. And that's all it was, but
it's rough.
Yeah, on the IRC chat, Chris says, keyboards are cheap, replace after every meal. Really, if I were still doing tech support for the general public, I'd either be wearing gloves all the time.
Yep.
Or I'd be bringing a separate keyboard to use.
Yeah, it's disgusting what we see sometimes.
I actually have a roll-up keyboard. It's a rubber keyboard. You can actually roll it up, stick it in your pocket.
Oh, sweet.
It's so cool. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Looks like that poor stool is going to collapse any second.
I know.
It came apart on me.
Dave's grooving to the music. All right.
Should see me Thursday nights.
That's right.
Usually nobody's here, and I can crank the music up loud, because I'm partially hard of hearing in the right ear. I admit it. But so I can crank it up, I have a lot. Luckily, there's no camera.
Yeah, right. We should leave it here for you on Thursday.
No, thank you.
All right, our next caller is, we have a, what are you doing? Yeah. He doesn't know what he's doing. Hold on, we're going to wait a minute because,
no, I got,
can I confuse you? Yeah. Joe, are you there from Cheektowaga?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. What can we do for you?
Well, to go back to one of your points earlier, you said give you a call. How many of you have gone through company mergers?
I have not. I came in at the end of two of them, so the pain was already over by the time I started in either of those companies.
Yeah, me, I worked at Kodak, and then after that, started my own business.
Well, you merged with Dan, sort
yeah,
of.
Yeah, true. Yeah, well,
sort of.
Yeah.
I mean that in the nicest
way.
Well, all right.
Salient point is something the size of AT&T and T-Mobile USA. Does anybody seriously expect that there are not going to be job reductions? I mean, that's one of the claims by AT&T. Oh, we're going to create jobs.
Never happens.
One of the other ones is, I think, increased competition. Let's see. We go from four national carriers to three, and right. This is going to increase competition. In what alternate universe?
The problem is if they say those things,
they're part politician.
They've got a chance. If they actually say, yeah, we'll be eventually taking away about 15,000 jobs and oh, by the way, killing one of our competitors.
Yeah, that's not a good spin.
Then that's just begging to be tossed out of court, which they were anyway, apparently. But you're right. None of that's just nonsense. How does it increase competition? I agree with you.
Theoretically, it makes AT&T stronger so they can compete against Verizon.
And
Sprint doesn't really count.
Sprint really doesn't count.
well, we were joking that if one was buying three, then two should buy four.
Right. Although Sprint has some plans in the works that could be useful. Anyway, go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, I know what you mean, because I'm a Boost Mobile customer, and they ride on the Sprint network, and at least around here in the Western New York area, their coverage is abysmal.
Yep.
But anyway, the other thing, Dave, when people come into your shop and mm-hmm. want an average computer, they're saying.
Yes.
I don't know, just thinking you might have a checklist say, hey, are you planning on playing World of Warcraft? Okay.
Oh, no.
Yes,
no,
we are.
No, the one thing we do, just to clarify this and just for the other folks to know, when I usually have somebody come in and want me to build them a computer or put together his specs, the first thing out of my mouth is, what are you going to do with it? And I want to know, and I sit there with each individual person because there is no, you know, blanket machine, I feel. So I sit there, and I want to know everything that they're going to do to it. That way, I can efficiently put a custom system together for them. And this is what I tell everybody. Anybody that comes into our shop and want us to build a system, I will always tell them, what do you want to do with it?
But that's an open-ended question. That could mean almost anything to them.
Right. Well, you're saying again, you specifically ask about some of those high-end things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I understand that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make them sign something that when they get it, sign something, and part of it says, I understand that this machine will not play World of Warcraft.
Well, I guess we do get into, so I won't say it all the time, but, you know, we will say, well, so you don't do any gaming or that, or you're doing any video editing? Because, again, those are other unique things that can add another, like Steve said, a comma to the,
And I fully understand people not being able to afford high-end machines, but then they have to understand their limitations. It's the same thing with those cars. If all you can afford is a winner beater, don't complain that you can't race it at Le Mans.
And the other thing, though, which I can't predict. So say they get the machine, they're really impressed with it, you know, and they pretty much put it on there what they want to do. But then all of a sudden they decide after the fact that they also want to do this. I can't second guess folks on,
you know,
3 months down the line, that all of a sudden now they're going to want to start playing online games or doing this or doing that. Or a newer program comes out, which is always the issue. Right now, I have some folks running Windows XP, and the machines, for the most part, run fine. There's nothing wrong with them. What's usually the issue is that they go step up to the next brand of software, and the problem there being in, say, Microsoft Office. Once you upgrade to these other newer versions of the software, they assume, instead of having this XP machine, you've now stepped up to this Windows 7 machine, which has minimum 4 gig of memory. The mm-hmm. processor's a lot better. Oh, you've got a 1 gig graphics card, not the 256, and running with Windows XP, which only takes a limit of 2 gig. So, you know, it's not that they're bad machines, but like I say, as Nick would always say, and I love using the phrase, the price of poker keeps going up.
Yep. And it's the same problem Chris was having, our second caller, about her first gen iTouch. It still does a lot of things, but there's a lot of things it doesn't do simply because the price of poker went up and she didn't ante up. You know, and it's
I know that all too well. I'm sitting here with a machine that has only 64 meg of video memory
mm-hmm.
and Pentium 4 processor. You know,
So you know, I mean, I try to cover all the bases. Will I do it all? You know, every time perfectly? No, but I try to. You know, I try to sit there and at least open some folks' eyes the best that I can. And usually, it's not too bad because you know. I maybe wake them up to some things that they don't really.
I actually like this car analogy I've come up with. Add a zero, and it's the kind of car you could buy.
Yeah.
Really,
well,
a $200 computer becomes a $2,000 car.
Yeah.
The other thing about adding zeros is a little future-proofness, too. It's like, yeah, I bought the system back in 2003, and I spent a little more than I ordinarily would have, but I was hoping to get, you know, a lot of mileage out of it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
If you're gonna keep a, you know, they say the average lifespan of a computer is 3 years.
Yeah.
And of course, if you're an accountant, then you want to amortize it over 5, and that's too bad. But let's say it's a 3 year life cycle. What are you gonna do with it for the next 3 years? You know, always buy at least one level up from what you think you'll need. It doesn't really future proof you, but it lets it last through the life of that machine. You know.
Gosh, I'm at average times 3. Ouch.
Well, yeah, you and everybody else. You know, but when I say the average lifespan of a computer is 3 years, 3 years from now, the computer you bought will, in fact, not be able to run some programs. 4 years from now, it won't be able to run more. 5 years more, 6 years more.
Mm-hmm.
That's my point. And
oh, yeah, like HD video for one thing. That's my biggest bugaboo.
Exactly. And so if you buy a little more than you need, you may get an extra year out of it. But the reality is you're just whatever you buy is obsolete and you didn't spend enough money if you plan on keeping it more than 3 years.
And that's one of the excuses, I guess is the word, to buy a $500 computer every year.
Yeah.
Because next year that $500 computer will be able to do more, and the next year it'll be able to do more.
It's still going to be a $5,000 car.
Yep.
It's still going to be a beater, but it's a better beater.
A better beater?
Better beater, better.
Rubber baby buggy bumpers.
Well, thank you for your time, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
There you go. That's one of the old tongue twisters. Rubber baby rib. Yep. Wow, now I can't do it. Rubber baby buggy bumpers, rubber baby buggy bumpers, rubber baby buggy bumpers, rubber baby buggy bumpers. Whew.
We had a record broken this week.
Congratulations. I'm sorry.
A couple of months ago, someone brought in a computer for repair from 1989. And we tried to repair it because it was her favorite computer when she was in. But we just couldn't find parts for it. This week, someone brought in a computer from 1985.
Wow.
And wanted us to repair it and was mad that we don't have parts lying around from 30 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I have children.
I'm glad I drove all the way here for this. Well, I'm sorry. You could have called and we could have said no.
Right. Would have saved you the trip.
Yeah, exactly. You could look on eBay. You might be able to find it. Well, I could buy a whole computer for $20. Well, yeah, then don't buy the floppy. He needed a floppy drive for a Mac 512 from 1985.
Yep.
And we've been going on pruning phase. Just last month, we emptied out our basement and recycled them all.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Lindenville, New York. Welcome, Pat. What's your question?
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad. Hey, listen, I wanted to let you know, I'm the one that called a few weeks ago with the Word on the network problem where it wouldn't open in Word, but it would open in OpenOffice.
Yeah, right.
And I just wanted to let you know that I did find a workaround that opening the document in OpenOffice and resaving it directly in Microsoft didn't work. I had to save it in rich text format.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
And then when I saved it back in Microsoft, they worked fine after that.
You could even still save it in RTF, and that's still
that is RTF, rich text format.
Yeah. Okay. I missed that part.
But I thought I'd let you know. But anyhow, I've got a question.
Well, before you go on, let me tell you what I think that was. And it's something we talked about, is the fact that you had some sort of a Trojan in there, a script that was running, and saving an RTF stripped out the script and saving it back, now the script is already gone. So it's okay now.
Right.
Yeah, good point.
That's interesting.
Yeah. All right, so what's your next question?
Well, do you guys know anything about Mythbuntu, MythTV?
Yes, a little. I don't run it myself. Mythbuntu is a version of Ubuntu that's really designed to run the Myth TV, M-Y-T-H. So it's M-Y-T-H, Buntu, B-U-N-T-U. And it runs Myth TV, which is essentially, a video recorder, a digital, a DVR system. You stick as Steve was talking about, a card that will let you, actually connect to your digital cable system, and you can then use that to record video and do all kinds of other things. I haven't used it myself. There is a bootable CD. You can download it from Mythbuntu, create a bootable CD, and test it out without actually doing anything to your computer. And it does all the stuff. It lets you change channels. It lets you see what's on. It lets you set recordings ahead of time. It lets you play things you've recorded, blah, 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 blah. And it works just like a regular DVR works. If you have multiple inputs, you can watch one thing while you record another. In fact, you can record as many things as you have inputs for and watch one and record on all the rest. So it's pretty flexible. It's a pretty neat product. Obviously, you can use as big a hard drive as you want. You can put as much RAM in as you want, so it's faster and more responsive. And I will tell you right now that as a cable customer, I am really angry at the ridiculously slow response time when I click a button before anything happens on my system. But there's a digression for you. But that's what it does, and it's a pretty neat product. It does come in a turnkey solution, so you don't even have to be terrifically good at installing things to get it to run.
Right. Well, I've been running it for 2 years.
There you go, then.
And the question I had was, I've added a second back end to it, and I wanted it add an HD card because I had analog cards in the original one.
Right.
And I'm having a trouble. I think it's a driver issue because I can't get it to see the new HD card. I don't even know if I have the right card, to be honest. And I was looking for someone to contact, hopefully fairly local or email or whatever, to discuss it with someone that has some experience.
Oh.
The Linux Users Group might know somebody.
Yeah, Lugor, lugor.org.
There's the Myth TV Wiki that would have a lot of information and might have resources for where to download drivers for what video cards that they know it works with.
Well, I found a driver update, and when I try to run the update, it doesn't find the file on it's LinuxTV.org is where it's trying to get the driver from, and apparently it's not finding the file or something because the command that I found on the website isn't loading it.
Well, we have somebody on the IRC chat right now who does that sort of thing. Tell you what, stay on the line. Dave, can you keep him on the line during the commercial, and we'll give him, during these little messages, and we'll give him the info that he needs to get hold of Dave. So we're going to take a break, back in just a couple of minutes. Blah, blah, blah. You know all that nonsense. More of Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Pat, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
You got to do me a favor, Pat. You got to call back and do it quick because we can't apparently transfer you out of the... Remember, this station was wired for a school, not for a talk show. So hang up. Call back. We won't put you on the air, but we will give you the email address.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sorry about that. Thanks. I feel bad, but that's all we can do. It's a problem because we have this system isn't designed to handle that stuff. We'd love to do an upgrade, but that would require
a pledge drive.
Significant. That would require a pledge drive just for that. So it's not really in the cards right now, unless someone who owns a phone company is listening and would like to donate a whole new phone system, we'd be happy to do that.
All right, hang on just a second here.
All right, hold on. We're trying to do six things at once.
Okay.
And I'm reading the news is what's happening now. Hold on.
Okay, Nick's got to do this so we can get to that.
There he is. Yeah, it's yeah. He's...
Okay, it's...
All right, but you have to be semi-quiet about this. Microsoft is betting the farm that its deal with Nokia will help kickstart the struggling Windows 7... the Windows Phone 7 platform. But two analysts say that Nokia's new Windows Phone 7 devices, including the Lumia, may well be duds. Forbes reports that a research note by Bernstein Research analyst Pierre Farragu paints a dismal picture for sales of Nokia's high-end Lumia 800 Windows Phone 7. Farragu said, "With no breakthrough innovation, we believe Nokia's new phones are unlikely to get traction in a highly concentrated high-end. Second, we don't believe Lumia phones are competitively priced. Third, we believe in economics of increasing returns for mobile ecosystems and judge it rather unlikely that Windows can gain critical mass against Android and iOS. Fourth, we have seen evidences of lack of traction for the Windows operating system over the last 12 months and challenge the idea that the Nokia brand can make a meaningful distance today." That's as bad an indictment of Windows Phone 7 as anyone has heard in some time. And Farragu isn't alone. Forbes said that Pacific Crest analyst James Fawcett has similar feelings and has lowered his estimates for sales of Nokia Windows Phone 7 devices. Initially, he had forecast up to 2 million of them being shipped in six markets for the holiday, which in and of itself is an awfully low number. He's now lowered that to less than 500,000 for December and under 1 million for the entire quarter. These research notes don't bode well for the future of Windows Phone 7. A year ago, it had disappointing sales for the holiday season. Since then, sales have gotten even worse, but there's been hope that Nokia would help turn that around. If the deal with Nokia doesn't help this holiday season, Microsoft still has a lot of long, hard work ahead of it. Looking forward to the Nokia Windows Phone 7? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Just like Wesley did from Colville, New York. Welcome, Wesley. What's your question?
Okay, I listen to a lot of online streaming.
Yep.
Our local radio stations and Rochester's radio stations come in fine audio level-wise, and even some stations from Ohio or Pennsylvania. There are a couple of them, unfortunately, one is yours, that the level output level is so low that it's mixed in with the noise level. I try jacking it up, and I get more noise as well as volume. Any ideas? I'm using Microsoft Player, using Mozilla Firefox. I tried it on Internet Explorer. That didn't make any difference. Have a Dell 521 computer. That helps.
And you're pulling this right off the data stream.
Yes.
One of the things that Rob has mentioned in the past is that the boards are all geared toward music, which has different levels than speech. And I notice that when I'm doing the podcasts, that I always have to amplify it before I post it. It's just something in the way the boards are set up and the amount of power that it's putting out into the internet stream versus the broadcast stream.
I'm not listening to music, I'm listening to talk.
Right, yeah, but the radio station here is set up for music.
Right, you have to remember, we're the only talk show on this station.
Uh-huh.
It was designed originally just to play jazz.
Okay.
So,
well, there's one other site that is very low output, too, but the rest of them are fine.
Yeah, and it may well be that they're in the same position we are. There's a lot of, there's just a lot of stuff that's different mm-hmm. between music and voice. And, you know, the frequency ranges and everything that are best for music may not, in fact, be best for voice. But I understand your problem. I don't know of a ready answer. Depending on what streaming software you're using, you may find something that lets you boost the signal that makes simply, you know, you can make it louder as it comes in.
Yeah, you could try a different streaming program like Winamp or iTunes and see what it can do. Or what's the other one? Total Recorder. That will also let you record those streams as well. That may have amplification features in it that can amplify the signal without amplifying the noise.
And the doctor had a good point. If you actually look at the Ustream stream, that's clumsy. You may find that audio is louder
than the broadcast stream.
Yeah, that's
true.
Certainly a possibility.
Yeah.
But we will also take this up with Rob and see if there's something that can be done in terms of making it. See, right now you can see that we're going a little over halfway up the meter. If you look over at the meter on the streaming system, you can see what I'm talking. You've turned that up, Dave, and we're now over halfway up the meter, so
mm-hmm. yeah.
That's pretty good. That's pretty much the range you want to be in.
Uh-huh.
It may just be that we've got the level set low for voice in general, and when we come on, we have to turn them up a little and then turn them back down again when we do music again.
One other thing, when you're talking, it's usually a little soft.
Nobody has ever accused me of that before.
But when Uncle Dave burst out laughing, my earphones fly off my head, and I'm deaf for a while.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
Well, Dave's
you
mic is much...
Do you have any peak limiter?
No, we don't, actually.
Well, no, what I try to do, and, you know, I try to watch these levels, but sometimes, like they say, this is set up to do easy talking music. Yeah. And when you start talking voices, and then you get emotions into that...
We get excited.
Yeah, I can peg this.
Well, and here's the other thing. Your mic is louder than ours.
Yes. Oh, yes, definitely.
And
it's a key mic.
Well, and that's exactly right. Now, you can fix that with levels,
right,
but generally we really don't.
I can lower it down to nothing and
generally,
still bring
you know,
it up.
Generally, we kind of leave it essentially wherever it is.
I try to, you know, keep it for
all
three
of us.
Certainly
for the podcast, when Chris Wright does it, he says he compresses the dynamic range. Steve does much the same thing.
Yeah, I use something called Levelator to try to equalize all the levels.
Right, but when it's coming over live, that's harder to do. You're right. We probably should pay somewhat more attention to our levels. And that's Dave's to do. But the reality is that this station was originally designed to pay more attention to the feed coming off of the CDs and records.
Well,
and
see,
stuff
that's
like
the
that.
One thing, you know.
So you're much louder now than I am.
Well, right yeah, because I moved this down. But again, you know, I try to pick a happy medium. Because what I did here before was just turn up our headsets so we could hear them louder. Right. But as far as us projecting out, that's all controlled by these buttons right here. And again, I try to pick something that's in the medium because sometimes we're talking very soft. And then sometimes our voices as we're getting into stuff, you know, I'm trying to...
But your mic is brighter than our mic, so you
correct.
Should keep yours down just a
yeah,
little
I,
more.
Yeah, that's
to
what
to
I do. I try to do. Yeah.
Because Dave is usually a little quieter than you, so his usually
right.
needs to be up higher.
Right, yeah. right. But yeah, I understand, it's a real problem anywhere that does stuff. Now, at our old station, we had a lot of people who were specifically...
And there's the guy that can fix the problem.
Oh, here's the boss.
The problem. Nice. Thanks for coming in. Here he is. Rob Linton, ladies and gentlemen. He doesn't care.
That's only our boss.
It's Saturday.
You know,
he's
when
not
you're
working.
On a station that's designed specifically for talk, they know that this is the sort of thing that's going to happen, and they have equalizers or whatever they call them, external compressors or whatever that do that leveling for you. When you're a music station, you actually don't want to do that leveling because that pulls down some of the stuff. And this station, and particularly this board, was actually designed for music, not for voice, and that's where the problem comes in. And that may be well true of the other station that you listen to that has this problem.
Mm-hmm. One other thought, I was wondering if you could ask around other listeners and see if they're having the same problem.
I'm sure they are. A couple people have already mentioned it on the on the IRC chat, I do understand the problem. But the reality is that we're really this place is designed to be a music station, as you hear there. All right, Wesley, we got to hang up. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
That music tells me we're done for another week. You have now successfully spent 2 hours of your life doing nothing productive, and instead listening to this show. We want to thank each and every one of you who did that. We're delighted to have been completely unproductive alongside you, and we will be doing it again next week. Because a couple of hours of non-productivity during the week is probably a good thing. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Stay tuned, because next will be George, who isn't here yet. Now, that's interesting. Oh, he's here? All right, I missed him coming in. With some of the best German music you will ever hear. Linda Weilman will keep him in check. You'll hear the whip every once in a while. We'll be back next week with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Sound Bites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.